is Lance Kenmore of the Kenmore team of Prudential Now Realty, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how have you been?
Designing plans of how to put a Santa Claus inflatable on a sloping roof.
It is that time of year for sure. I was out replacing some colored bulbs in the landscape lighting myself last week. So, it is definitely that time of year for sure. And we've had pretty good weather for it, really.
Yeah, it hasn't been bad at all.
Hasn't been bad at all. We have with us in the studio Mr. Tom Coyne with Sterling, our resident in-house lending expert. Tom, how have you been?
Well, I've been pretty good, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to go home and put some lights up after the show today.
After the show today, for sure.
The lady's been riding me about getting out and doing it.
Yeah, definitely. We did some trees and everything at the house, and so I'm becoming semi-Griswold up there for sure. So it's fun, but now it's nice. The kids are getting old enough that they're actually some help.
Oh, nice. Yeah, send the kid up the ladder. There you go.
Send the kid up the ladder. So there we go. It is definitely that time of year. We've talked about holiday decor, and that kind of just brings up a good quick point that, you know, it really, those little touches like that make the houses show, you know, we talked last week, feel a little more homey and a little more inviting, and this time of year, it's not a bad thing to do some of that stuff still when you have your house on the market this time of year. And the weather's been really good. It's still been easy to show other than a couple flashlights. It's a little dark by the time we get showing people out.
A little cold.
But there is a lot still going on. So that is definitely a good tip for sure. We always like to start off with our crazy celebrity real estate story. And if I can, when I really can go deep, I try to get this related back to the Tri-Cities. So here we go. Earlier this year, and I know it really just devastated the two of you guys, the Jonas Brothers kind of broke hearts when they announced they were breaking up, canceling the rest of their tour, and going to do their individual things. one of the things that happened is Nick Jonas, who kind of initiated that breakup, right after they had announced that, it looks like he went under contract on a house in L.A. for $3.2 million. Now, previously, and here comes the connection, you knew I'd get to it eventually, you're like, how is he going to get Jonas Brothers to Tri-Cities? Previously, he had been renting an apartment in New York because he was starring in a Broadway play, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, and he was renting that apartment from Scott Gomez. Scott Gomez, previously Tri-City American back in the late
90s. Okay, there it is. Nice.
So there's your celebrity real estate story tied back to the Tri-Cities for you. And we're going to talk today about rental and investment income property on the show. So he could have stayed in the Big Apple, but sounds like he's making a West Coast appearance buying this house. $3.2 million in L.A. will get you just about 2,300 square feet. So a little bit more than we could probably pick that up for you around here for around 200 pretty easily. So a little bit more than that. So that's our crazy celebrity real estate story. And this week, tied back to the Tri-City Americans and a hockey player that made quite an impression around here.
Nice work. So I'm going to start calling you detective.
Housing detective. Crazy real estate.
Now there's a reality show.
Oh.
Housing detective.
Housing detective. There you go. I don't want to step on Holmes' toes for the inspection shows. So one of the things we wanted to talk about, had some great past clients contact us the last couple weeks about purchasing some more investment property, some selling some, and then buying some bigger properties. So it really kind of reminded me of some clients we had sold, great clients we had sold to in the past, investment property. Things still going well there and really enjoying that. Plus a couple things that we've gone through recently. We hadn't really talked on the show about investment property, and when it might be a good time to buy and some of the things to consider. So I wanted to kind of hit that up today and talk a little bit about that. The first thing I wrote down when you're looking at these type of things, and I've talked about it before, and it's really important when you're buying also or even selling, looking at it as a seller, but especially so important from an investment side, is number one, being realistic about the home inspection. A lot of times you're really evaluating numbers, and investors get into that situation of, do the numbers work? What's the cash flow look like? And it's really easy to ignore some things that often come up in the home inspections. One of the things that does pop up a lot, and we've had some issues with getting some bids lately and recently on some transactions, is really looking to what that inspector is saying about the roof. A major item like a roof, you know, maybe it's been on 15 years, 18 years, and, you know, was that a 30-year roof? Was that a 50-year roof? And what is the situation like now? So, because you're going to have to put that into the budget. It might not be leaking now, but that's going to be, you know, anywhere from, depending on the size of the house, a $6,000 to $12,000, you know, item, and that can take a lot of hurt out of a rental investment property. The next biggest factor that we're finding, and it comes up this time of year, is everybody's looking for that heat switch to click over to heat, is what is the situation with the heating and air? How old is that unit? How has it been maintained? And that is another big dollar factor that inspectors are very good at looking at and evaluating pricing on. One of the things that can happen is in these negotiations, that inspection period is really a time for you to make a decision, is the cash flow going to cover these items? So really think about, from a buyer's perspective of these properties, getting as much of that done as you can before taking over. Because after you've taken over, you're collecting those monthly rents, but that responsibility, and this is a lot of times a first-time investor, is easy to forget, that responsibility lies to you. And if you have a major system like that go out in the first couple months when you haven't had time to build your reserves, that's coming straight out of your savings. And so making sure you have those big items handled to the best of your ability is a huge, huge issue. Number two that a lot of times gets glossed over in advertisements and cash flow analysis and looking at things is what I call the vacancy factor. And banks and lenders will really look at this, and you really got to consider. So let's look at a budget. Say you're looking at, you've purchased a house, and it is, say the rental rate is $1,000 per month, and you're getting $200 per month of cash flow from that. But if you look at what would happen if that property was vacant for 1 month. Mm-hmm. And then that's very typical, depending upon when people move out and clean up and repair. So 1 month's rent in this situation is $1,000. Well, you were only cash flowing $200 a month, so it's going to take you 5 months of saving that cash flow just to cover a one-month vacancy. Generally, we're using calculations of 85 to 90% right now in our local Tri-Cities market, but those have to be adjusted for the type of property you have, the neighborhood and stuff you're in, and it really can vary. I've had properties with 80% occupancy rates before, and then I've had other properties that have had 100% occupancy for 5 years, so it really can vary from property to property, but you never know what's going to happen there. So vacancy factor is a big thing when looking at your calculations. The third thing that I wrote down that a lot of people don't look at or don't consider that I find is time. And this is not a project that is going to be always super easy, and it's not always just going to run itself. So smart investors really look at how much time are you willing to spend to make this venture work. We think it's a great idea. It really turns out to be a lot of times forced savings for people, and there's a lot of benefits to that. But one of the things is how much time are you going to spend each month staying educated on landlord-tenant issues? You need to stay up on those laws so you don't violate any laws, put yourself in a compromising position. Are you going to be maintaining the lawns on the property? Is that more time in the summer? than you're used to spending when you might have other activities you're used to doing. And then really, I wrote down scheduled time to do visual checks of the property. I always think back to, I had, for instance, and made a mistake early on when I was doing investing, and if I can make the mistake and help a listener not make it, great. It'll be much cheaper for you, I promise. And so one of the things we had is we had had a rental that had perfect tenants in it for 2 years. Never late on their rent. Just great. So you kind of get back into autopilot where you're like, oh, everything's going great. Checks are still coming in. Well, one of the times we get this call in late August, and I get this call, and they're like, hey, you know, the lawn's kind of burnt up. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, what happened there? And they're like, well, the sprinklers, you know, when we started the sprinklers up earlier this year, they never worked. And so I'm like, well, how long are we talking about here? And they're like, oh, it was like early spring.
Oh, no.
Okay, so, you know, late August, 100-degree weather here in Trenton. So the lawn's completely burnt up. And we're talking like total, you know, replacement, pull out the damaged grass. I mean, really, when it was all said and done, it cost me, you know, $3,000 to $4,000 to fix all of the problems. And I really learned my lesson, that first lesson about monthly visual checks, you know, having it in our schedule to, you know, that way you're never more than a couple weeks out of noticing a problem. Sometimes when those early problems start to happen, you know, junk starts to pile up outside a rental, or, you know, new broken down engines and boats, you know,
cars up on the water,
ocean going boats start to, you know, show up. What happens is if you can get to that stuff quickly and address those problems, a lot of times it goes much, much better. And then sometimes to kind of handle those problems and keep that from happening, a lot of times we'll even go a step further and we will charge just a little higher rent, but then work into the contract where we take care of all the landscaping. And then that way we know that's being done properly and handled each week, and if there's any problems, we can fix them quickly. As an owner, you always have that perspective of a little more urgency of getting those items fixed. So those are some of the biggest points that I wrote down, kind of the first big three. Of course, we've got six or seven more. When we come back, we're going to talk about deciding to do a venture like this. How can we start to identify those properties and talk to Tom and Sterling about what we're looking at as far as money?
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking about some things to consider before purchasing and operating investment property and rentals. We are in a great market where purchase prices really allow rentals to work well. We've had a lot of investors that purchase here, have rentals, and have really built equity and done really well with that over the years. So it's nice that we're in a market where the rents match up very closely to purchases with a certain amount down. So, Tom, I know that it is a different animal when you look at buying investment property versus personal residences. So, yeah, talk to us a little bit about that. What do we need to think about?
Yeah, there's a lot of differences in comparison to owner-occupied financing. The main difference is in the terms of the financing between the investment property and, say, an owner-occupied property where the owner will be living in there as the primary residence, is the amount of down payment that's required and the interest rate on that investment loan. While owner-occupied financing on conventional loans requires just 5% down, the minimum down payment for an investment property for someone who has four or less finance homes is 15%.
Oh, okay.
So it's an extra 10% that someone will have to put down. However, the mortgage insurance and the interest rate will be really high at just 15% down. So I usually recommend people put at least 20% down, and it gets even better if they put 25% down.
Gotcha.
So you're seeing it's going to require a lot more to get into that home. Now, that down payment's a big challenge for a lot of people, and it can be difficult to come up with 20% down on investment property. That's $30,000 on, say, a $150,000 home.
Yep.
So what a lot of people do is convert their current home into an investment property and purchase a new owner-occupied property to move into. Now, there's things we look at in this scenario. One of the biggest concerns for lenders in this situation is, does this move make sense? if someone lives in, say, a $250,000 home in Horn Rapids, and they come to us and say, we want to purchase a new $120,000 home in Central Richmond to be my owner-occupied property. Well, that probably doesn't make a lot of sense to us, and it's definitely going to raise some questions. Fannie Mae makes sure that we do our due diligence to ensure that people aren't using owner-occupied financing to obtain investment properties. Now, it normally wouldn't make sense that a person is leaving a $250,000 home and moving into a $120,000 home. However, if it's the other way around, maybe they're currently in a $120,000 home, and they plan to purchase that same $250,000 home to move into, convert it to their primary, and convert the current to a rental, then that makes sense.
Right. They're moving up, and we have a lot of folks that do that. You know, they'll have some equity there, and they'll contact us, and it's like, well, you know what, I think we're going to move up, and I think we're going to keep this house. And I've even done that myself a couple times, and it works really well.
Yeah, absolutely. Move up is the key word. We need to look at the transaction between the current house, the new home, and does this appear to be a move up or an improvement in the current home? Now, a new rule that came out in February this year says if someone purchases or refinances a home as owner-occupied, they cannot get another owner-occupied loan within the next 12 months. This is, again, to protect lenders from people using owner-occupied financing to obtain investment properties. So you can't purchase a home in, say, June as owner-occupied and then come to us in September and try to buy a new home as owner-occupied.
Gotcha.
You need to live in the home at least 12 months. Now, the exception to that rule is if something has changed. Now, one deal I recently did, there was an elderly couple who we had done an owner-occupied refinance for, and just a few months later they came to me. They wanted to purchase a new home. The husband had fell down the stairs. He broke his leg. It was getting... It just became really apparent that they needed to get into a Rambler. So we did approve that loan for them to purchase the new home. It had to be a Rambler, but it made sense. It made sense why they were doing it.
Yeah, that does, and you were able to document that. But that's something that you have to work through with your underwriters and to get that done.
I mean, we literally had to go as far as getting a doctor's note.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, there you go. You've gotten a doctor's note to miss school and to buy a second residence.
So,
I love it.
There are hoops that you might have to jump through if you're going to be one of those exceptions, but just be aware that that rule is out there, and it is, again, to protect lenders against people using owner-occupied financing to get these investment properties.
Which through, you know, late 2000, you know, 6, 7, 8, there was a lot of that fraud going on and that type of stuff happening.
Oh, yeah.
So definitely tighter to make sure that doesn't happen again and create another huge bubble.
Right, exactly. There's definitely those safeguards that are put in place now. Another requirement we have, and this is really a good thing, and Lance, you mentioned reserves earlier in the show, is that when someone's purchasing an investment property, they need to have 6 months reserves on all the homes that they own. So if, and this is in addition to the home that they're purchasing as well. So 1 month reserve is equivalent to 1 month house payment. So if you have a payment of $1,000, you need 6 months of reserves to meet this requirement. Now, a lot of people just get us a copy of a retirement account statement or 401k to meet this requirement. You don't have to use these funds. You just have to show that they're available in the event of a hardship. But again, reserves are a good thing to have regardless, because there's always something that's going to come up that you need to tap into that savings or that reserves that you've built up. And by having that already set aside, you have the funds to do so. Now, all these rules that I'm talking about aren't just Sterling rules. They're Fannie Mae rules, which apply to basically all lenders. However, a lot of lenders only allow clients to have up to 4 finance properties. Sterling will actually allow it to 10 finance properties.
Mm.
It opens the doors to a lot of people that are trying to build investment property portfolios. Now, after hearing all these rules in regards to investment properties, people may be asking, why are there so many additional rules to get investment properties? The main reason is risk. If someone's going through hardship and they're having trouble making their house payment, are they going to make sure that the home they live in is getting paid or the house down the street that has some strangers living in it?
Right.
They're, of course, going to make the payment on the home they reside in first. So investment properties pose much more risk than owner-occupied homes. Lenders try to mitigate that risk by requiring greater down payment, more reserves in the bank, and then the higher interest rate. Even with all these rules, I still believe that buying and owning investment properties is one of the best ways people can build the long-term wealth. Imagine, Lance, if you had 10 investment properties that you bought today, you put them all on 15-year loans, the rent's probably covering what the house payment is. If you paid each of those homes off in 15 years, maybe they're all worth $200,000.
Yep.
You have $2 million in real estate that's owned free and clear.
Yeah, it's really powerful when you look at what you're willing to do there. And we've had some great clients that have done exactly that, you know, over, I've watched them do it, you know, that over the last 14 years, and they've built incredible portfolios. And it is a lot of work, but the benefits at the end of it are also really, really strong.
Yeah, people just have to determine, are we willing to spend this extra time every month, because it's a second job for you, to be able to have this reward at the end. So if you go into it with the mindset that this is a second job, there's going to be challenges I'm not going to have to overcome, but if I'm smart, treat it as a business, the reward is great.
Awesome. Great information, Tom. Thanks for bringing that to the table. And getting the money and the proper amounts down to do that type of investment is definitely a huge, huge portion of it. Kind of right in line with that, one of the points I wrote down, just kind of riding your coattails there that you were talking about, is another thing to consider when you do this is the cost of your money here. So when we talked about those down payments and that you put in there, this is a big one that sometimes folks overlook. But so if you buy a house, you know, if you save up to buy a house, look at your goals. Your money might have been making, say, you know, 3% in a money market account or a savings account or an investment account. Say your money was making 3% or 4% sitting there. Now you're going to toss it into a property, but at the same time, that previous 3 to 4%, there was really probably limited time involved. You might move it up, and now you're making 7% on your money. And I'm glad you mentioned the time, but you add 10 hours a month. Well, how does that factor into your return? If you look, okay, what would I pay myself for 10 hours a month? Subtract that off. Sometimes that just that pure additional 7% return, you know, then gets bumped back down to 6 or 5.5, and you're having to decide there. Another thing about it is, just like Tom was mentioning, I really think that you need to have a great partnership or relationship with your banker and your mortgage professional and talk to them about future requirements and what those requirements would be. They're very good about knowing those scenarios. So you go in and you talk to them, you say, okay, you know, next year, 2014, I've looked at my plan and I want to buy 2 investment properties. Tom, how much do I have saved and what accounts do they need to be in to be able to, you know, purchase one by April and then one by October? What does that look like so that you have a real idea of what things are going to look like versus just kind of going haphazardly and guessing that? So I think those meetings and those partnerships with somebody like Tom is a fantastic way to do it. And then, depending upon the program changes and how things go, then people have a good idea of what they have to have. And you can set them on the right road, Tom.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we just scratched the surface here with the rules and everything that goes into investment properties. There's a ton more information. But if you go and sit down and get this information ahead of time, it allows you to plan and really set the path that you need to take to be able to make it a reality.
Very, very good. The next point that I wrote down, and one of the biggest hidden costs that can come up with rentals and things to look at history-wise when you're looking at purchasing a property, and that is repairs after vacancy. So, number one, the property is vacant, and so you're not getting your rental income. So you're already not very happy about that. And then number two, now you're paying money out of pocket to have paint done or repairs made. So you're going backwards twice as fast as you were the previous month. And that's usually not a good feeling, even if you've been through it before. So one of the things to really look at and minimize is your move-in, move-out sheet is very important for both the tenant and the landlord. Looking at paying close attention to having the tenant go through the property, mark down any problems they see with the property, and do a condition report, and then having both of you sign that and agree to that, because a lot of times then you have that in place. Another great way to do things is we've attached picture documentation to that. with digital cameras nowadays and the easy storage on your computer, it's very easy to, before move-in, snap 6 or 7 pictures of the rooms, dated pictures, so you have a timestamp of here's how things actually look. And then you have a signature off on those by the tenant. If there's a dispute later on, then you have that information that will allow you to either keep a damage or security deposit and more make repairs and have those charged to the tenant rather than yourself. So you definitely need to have that in place. Also, your lease has to be very clear about what the security deposit and cleaning deposit can be used for. This will give you kind of flexibility to use the money for those type of repairs. So, yeah, I just can't say enough how important it is to have those things documented prior to move in, because when things happen, memories become very, very short, I've found, for sure. So having that in place really, really helps. Then also, the next biggest thing is having a great resource of service providers. A lot of times, if you have a couple rentals, you can get some preset prices or packages as far as cleaning, carpet cleaning, paint, having somebody you can trust to get in there and take care of those items in a timely manner. Mainly what I'm concerned about will help you get back onto the rental market faster. And so that's a great, great thing to look at. And then the last expense that a lot of times is overlooked and I see missing and then we talk with clients about when they buy, and that is business licenses and professional fees. In general, some of this stuff will really require a consultation with an attorney. If you have questions about lease or legal questions, you might need to do a consultation with an attorney to review those items. And then a CPA to make sure that you're properly utilizing your deductions, you're placing things in the right spots so that you are getting the most advantage. And there's a lot of advantages that you can talk to a CPA about that can come out of having these rental properties. So making sure that's structured properly, there'll definitely be a little bit of cost involved with that. And I would caution to not believe everything you hear on the internet or read on the internet about some of those deductions and the way people do things. Please consult with a local CPA that has been through that and knows those laws, and that's what they do. And then you also will have potentially the considering how you're going to hold that property. Are you going to hold it in your personal name? Are you going to operate the rental business under an LLC? And so that stuff and those consultations do add up a little bit that can save you thousands down the road. So those are some of the big things that we've been through. I know, you know, I have rental property, Tom. I know you have rental property. So this is not just advice that we just haphazardly throw out on the air.
Oh, we live it.
This is stuff that we live, and we've done this strategy ourselves. So it's really nice. We love talking to people about it because we use it as a strategy to gain longer-term wealth. A lot of times that we were talking off the air, we won't go through it all, but Tom and I, we both made the mistakes, so we might be able to save you a little bit of money and some hassle because we've been through it before. If you have any questions at all, you can always contact us on our website at kenmorteam.com. I'd love to thank the listeners. I had 3 appointments this week at radio listeners, radio show listeners' houses to evaluate. We appreciate you having us out to take a look at those properties, and we look forward to helping you. And Tom, if people have questions about the money end, how can they get a hold of you?
Give me a call at the office, 783-7300, or visit me on my website at tomcoinhomeloans.com.
Okay, and then we will be right back here next week. Am I in the right mindset that it's going to have been Thanksgiving by the time we have our next show?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay, well then I just want to say happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
To everybody out there, enjoy the time with your family, enjoy your homes. And we will talk to you afterwards. I will probably be 10 pounds heavier next Saturday when we're back here.
We all will on News Talk 870.